I put the microphone over here so you can hear me. I'm Bob Law. Hey, listen, right now in New York City, there's an interesting and even peculiar construct operating just below the social service or the social surface scene. You know, there's new in Brooklyn, for instance, there's new or in New York City, there's new neighborhoods with trendy bars, cafes, and restaurants, condos going up, bicycle lanes, people in the street enjoying the emergence of a newer New York. And people are excited about it. And it looks like something really hot and hip is happening. At the same time, it appears that longtime residents are being trampled on. Quality police presence occurs only when whites move into the neighborhood, and then that police presence is set aside for whites only. Public schools in the five boroughs are segregated and inferior. The housing authority seems to be the city's biggest slumlord. And now we learn that the emerging new city is being made possible by stealing the property of blacks, mostly seniors. And the city is the thief. Let's look at that this mid-morning at 11:01 from the hidden clock in the studio. 11:01 on a sunny Saturday morning in the city. I'm Bob Law. We're going to look a little bit closer about at what's going on right under the surface. It looks like there's two cities operating at the same time. We'll talk, and then we want to talk a little bit more about what I feel is Trump's real appeal and what the 2020 challenge really is. Stay close to your radio. Join me for From the Streets with me. I'm Bob Law. I'm Bob Law. Welcome. Stay close to your radio. We're at 99.5 WBAI on this mid-Saturday morning in the city. 11:02 and sunny. Going to be in the mid-70s. Pleasant day given what has been taking place in the weather all this week with the powerful, powerful storm. You know, I think that they're giving these storms the wrong name. I wonder if we were to look at the path of the storm historically and wonder how people would feel about these storms, and if the name was Marcus or Sojourner or Harriet, you know, didn't Marcus say, "Look for me in the storm, look for me in the whirlwind"? Did the storm really travel the same path as the African slave trade? Does it travel up through the Bahamas and up to the to America and then up the East Coast? Same path as the African slave trade? It's a whole other conversation, which we might have at some point. One of the things happening in New York City right now that I want you to fully be aware of is that there's going to be an emergency town hall meeting on Tuesday, September 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. The flyer says city agencies accused of stealing property of black homeowners. And therefore, there's an emergency town hall meeting Tuesday, September 10th, 6 to 8 p.m., explaining the city programs that residents and elected officials have called deed theft. It's a program that targets black property owners. That town hall is going to be hosted by myself and our sister Ann Tripp, moderated by New York radio personalities. I like that. Bob Law and Ann Tripp. And it's going to take place at the historic First Church of God in Christ, which is at 221 Kingston Avenue in Brooklyn. And you'll get some insight. You'll find out what is happening. Get insight from the about the moratorium on foreclosures. The people who are participating and that you can hear from, some of the people who that you can hear from will be Councilman Robert Cronicky, Borough President, Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, and State Senator Valmonette Montgomery, among those who are going to be there to get insight about the moratorium on foreclosures, the newly signed deed theft bill that Senator Montgomery co-authored, and the new funding to protect senior homeowners in what are being called naturally occurring retirement communities. Naturally occurring retirement communities. That is a program that has been developed and secured by Councilman Robert Cronicky. There'll be other people who are going to be there as well. And but you should be there. Find out what is happening. Find out what is going on. Joining us right now for the first few minutes is James Peebles. He is with the Harlem Housing Advocacy Group. And James Peebles specializes in real estate investment analysis and has been involved in research of the Harlem real estate market since 1985. He has over 35 years of experience in the building and construction industry. He's one of the people that is going to be with us at the town hall meeting as well. James Peebles, welcome. Glad to have you with us.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you so much for having me.
I know you have a really important prior commitment, so I'm not going to keep you a long time, and I appreciate you, given the commitment that you already have, I appreciate you carving out some time to spend a few minutes with us this morning. Let me see if we therefore can't get right to it. We have a concern about this deed theft. We have a concern about how property is being taken away from Black property owners. It seems it is Black property owners almost entirely. There are some white property owners who are caught up in it because they live in Black communities. And there's a real estate industry that wants all the property. And so, but it is Black property owners, particularly seniors, who are the victims of this. But I think people are still not quite clear how so. How does this work? How is it that the city, and we think that at this point, we think that it is the housing, HPD, the Housing Preservation Department, particularly through the third party transfer program. How is it? What has been your experience? How does that process work to the point where it is victimizing Black property owners?
Well, that certainly is a very broad topic. And it has multi facets. But certainly, most things in our society are caused by liens and debts that are placed on our small property owners. And all of it seems to be limiting what rights and powers that a small property owner might avail themselves of in terms of managing, owning, and profiting from their investment in our cities. Mm-hmm. Particularly, a lot of people, particularly the elderly that you speak about, bought properties years ago. I know a family from Haiti and Guyana purchased a property in 1966 in Park Slope for $10,000. The property is valued at at $4 million today. Mm. But they went to the bank to try to get some money to renovate it so that they might raise the rents and change from the historical rooming houses that we've been limited to, more transient type of situation. They try to get their properties up to a level where the income could offset the ever-increasing expenses. And they were turned down. They had all of this equity. They went there saying, oh, my property is worth this. But they owned it. They were unsophisticated in the sense of they were inquiring, realizing that it's not just the amount of equity you have and the value of your collateral, but your ability to repay the debt. And they didn't. They weren't able to do so. And so the property fell into disrepair. And then comes the city and its various agencies placing fines and emergency repairs on them after they've been denied money that they could have done it themselves. Mm-hmm. And those fees are exorbitant in many instances because there's not enough oversight on contractors and others involved for profit at the expense of the homeowner.
Wait, let me just walk through that quick.
Okay.
The city comes in and starts to make the repairs.
Yes.
But the city charges the homeowner for the repairs. Right? The homeowner can't select the construction company or whoever it is themselves to make the repairs. The city demands the repairs because you're in violation. And the city also sends someone in to make the repairs, and then the city gives the homeowner a bill.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And the bill is often, if not always, exorbitant.
That's right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. And so to compound that, you have an agency that's supposed to be preserving home ownership opportunities. They themselves, by their policies and things, there's a program called the AEP program, which is an alternate enforcement program. And essentially, the purpose, as we've understood it, was to help homeowners who have violations on their property. I think it's more than 8 what they call B and C violations, C being the most hazardous and need to be corrected in a timely manner, which is what the issue is, you know. And as well, if you owe, I think, $1,000 for 3 years, $1,000 on your real estate taxes. And so then they come in, and instead of you getting out of the program, it accelerates to the point that we've had instances of recent time where, talking about where people come in, and I say people, for-profit developers or even non-profit developers, come in and just take over the property owner's rights. And this is a big problem.
I just want to be clear with that. I miss.
Okay.
Say that again. They come in and take over the property owner's rights. Who comes in? How does that work?
As we mentioned, you know, once you start drying up sources of capital in terms of the small property owner's ability to access the funds necessary to make the corrections, once you clog that up, then they're at the mercy of who provides the money. And so then the city agencies come in and they provide it. But there's not seem to be enough oversight over what the cost of it is and the ultimate impact it has on the small property owners. And so they're compromised. And this is on small property owners, you know, brownstone owners, but as you also mentioned, the third-party transfer program. This is a clear evidence of how this is abused, because during the conversion process from a rental property to a so-called affordable housing co-op, debt is placed on the property. Debt, if they were to go there on their own, they wouldn't even qualify for the loan. They seem to just... people that are giving this money seem to just ignore basic bank underwriting standards in terms of one's ability to repay the debt. No matter what collateral you have, if you can't pay it back, inevitably you're going to lose your property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been going on a very large scale throughout the four boroughs, at least we know. Staten Island hasn't had so much of an impact of this.
Yeah, I wonder why. Neither does Bay Ridge or Bensonhurst, predominantly white areas. There's no foreclosure. There's no third-party transfer. There's no buildings in distress. This is something that occurs singularly in black communities. And the whites who are victimized by this, because there are some white people who are victimized as well, they are the people who live in what used to be black communities. It is it's peculiar. It's one of there's a need for clarity. There's a need for understanding that is one of the reasons that we're convening. Myself and Ann Tripp, it's one of the reasons we're convening this emergency town hall meeting Tuesday. It is Tuesday, September 10th. It is going to be at the historic First Church of God in Christ, where I used to teach Sunday school as a little kid. And the First Church is at 221 Kingston Avenue in Brooklyn. If you need any information how to get there, any information about the rally, you can call 347-675-0710, 347-675-0710. We're talking with James Peebles. He is with the Harlem Housing Advocacy Group, Just before we let you go, we're going to be joined in the conversation in a moment by Senator Velmanette Montgomery. But James, we've been talking about moving on homeowners, brownstone homeowners, for the most part. But I understand that multiple dwellings are also targeted, and I wonder, how does that work? Who in the multiple dwelling is everybody in the multiple dwelling behind in their rent or something? You know, even that you, and I know that you are in a multiple dwelling which is in good shape and well managed, so you've avoided all of that. But what is the danger even for the multiple dwellings like Lenox Terrace and in Harlem and Pratt Towers in Brooklyn? You know, how do they target those kind of multiple dwellings?
Wow. I mean, one of the things is that you've heard of the renter's mentality. And basically the renter's mentality for a long time has been put out that in certain neighborhoods, people feel they can live in your building and not have to pay anything. That's the image. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, there's the ever-dangling carrot of the possibility of having some equity in where you've been living as a renter for years. That is converting the rental property into HDFC co-op, Housing Development Fund co-ops, which supposedly would give former renters more control over their housing destination, so to speak. And we found that through process, there are people who've been promised that they're going to become shareholders, and they're still in the process. The tenant interim lease program, for instance, they've been in it for 20 years, and they still haven't made the conversion into shareholders where they have some equity. And so I think what happens is, without vetting the residents of rental apartment buildings, because mind you, after most of the small brownstones have been taken over by other folk through a process we might call gentrification, what have you, the last big control of land in our areas are these big apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they start converting them to co-ops, but they're converted in a way that your continued ownership and the promise of the ability to pass it on to your heirs and loved ones, it's diminished.
Mm.
Because the formation of it, when people are less able to fight back, that is, the people who are renters, because they've been renters, they don't have the same viewpoint as, say, a property owner has had over the years. And so, therefore, they're more easily exploited. And so that's what happens, because,
all right,
like I said, if you had a choice of you're just starting out and somebody say, here's a $6 million debt that you had no control over how it was spent, all you were left with was the bill.
Mm.
And you couldn't pay it.
Right.
And so then they pointed you and say, oh, you're inadequate. You've managed the property incorrectly, and so we're going to take it. And so they do. How do they take it? They take it through regulations.
They take it
through rules that they make up.
Yeah.
Completely detached from the desire to have a solution to it. That's what's wrong.
They're using policy that they wrote.
And
when they are confronted, as HPD was confronted at a city council hearing, they said, well, we're just following policy, as though policy falls out of the sky. Somebody wrote the policy. Somebody concocted a policy that makes deed theft possible. That's one of the things we're going to talk about with Senator Velmanette Montgomery, who joins the conversation with us right now. James Peebles, I appreciate you being with us. I know you have to go, and I thank you for carving out this time. We're looking for you, though, on Tuesday. You maybe have You have a little bit more time.
I'd like to leave one thing, Bob. I'd like to leave our email for anyone who might have questions after the show for the Harlem Housing Advocacy Group.
Okay.
If it's okay.
Certainly.
And so our email is hello@hhaginc.com. hello@hellofresh.org.
Say it again. Hello at?
Hello at hhaginc.org.
All right. All right, James Peebles, we're looking forward to seeing you on Tuesday. We'll have a little bit more time to kind of help people understand what is going on. Thank you for spending this time with us this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. We are grateful.
All right, now, thank you. Senator Velmanette Montgomery joins the conversation. Senator Montgomery, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Well, good
to hear your voice and be with you.
Well, good morning. Haven't talked to you in a long time. How are you doing? This is going to turn into a personal conversation first.
I know. I was afraid of that, but I'm going to try to control myself. But it is so good. If I saw you, you would be a sight for sore eyes. So you are good for the voice.
Good to have you with me. Good indeed. And one of the things we wanted you to talk about, and hopefully you'll be with us on Tuesday when we do the town hall meeting and give even more information. I want people to be clear about deed theft. We've talked with James Peebles and other conversations we've had on the air and in private. We've had conversations with Councilman Robert Carnegie, who raised some of these concerns about property being just illegally, if not illegal, but immorally, probably being taken from what has been defined as deed theft. So, and you responded to that. You co-authored a bill to prevent deed theft. It is called the Deed Theft Bill. So can you just can you explain that for us?
Yes. Well, if I may, I just want to say that this is really the result of the New York State Senate, so that we became the majority this session. Mm. And as part of that, a number of us who are
Wait, I'm sorry. Something happened and we missed an important part of that statement. You were saying this became the result of, and then we lost you for a moment. So
this is the result of a change in the majority in the New York State Senate.
Okay.
So the Democrats became majority in the state Senate with 39 members.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, Democrats were chairs of all of the committees. So once we were in a position to actually make something happen, and this issue around deed theft and what was happening to properties in many of our districts, was pointed out to us. I saw article after article in papers across the city, especially in Brooklyn. We had a hearing on it, led by the borough president and several of us who are now in position to do something about it, including the chair of housing, the chair of the Black and Puerto Rican caucus, and myself and many others came together. We had a hearing in March, and many of the issues that were brought to us, we went to work to try to make sure that we were responding as elected officials to change the law. So each one of the members who were at that hearing introduced different aspects of legislation, mm-hmm. and I introduced the deed theft bill.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just one of the bills that we were able to introduce. This one, fortunately, has actually been signed by the governor and is now law. And so what the bill does is provide stronger protection for people who find themselves in foreclosure or having had someone illegally take possession of their deed, which was a huge problem for homeowners. There were people who came to us and said that someone had stolen their deed and they did not know that they were no longer the owners of and that someone came and said, you have to be removed from this property because you are no longer the owner.
And they were finding that out for the first time.
Yes, wow. They found out. And so they, those people then had no way of getting their property back. Under the new bill, under this bill, under this law, in cases like that, those owners will be now able to restore the title of their property to the original legal owner. So the bill creates a pathway for that to happen. The other piece was that there are many people who present themselves as legitimate consultants. We address that consultancy issue by making that illegal. In other words, you are not now able to present yourself as a consultant unless you are actually legitimately, legally designated as a property consultant, and that you are not to harass people to claim that they've lost their property and you're coming there to help them get it back. You're not allowed to take possession of a person's property under false pretenses. Let me sign your deed over to me temporarily, and I will get your property back and then give it back to you. That is illegal now. So there are many.
Wait. That wasn't illegal before? You could,
it was
people,
not illegal.
People
it
could
was
actually,
happening a lot. Yes, a number of people have been duped into signing over their property to someone under the promise that they would be receiving it back once the foreclosure issues were cleared up. So that is no longer. So this bill tried to address those that were brought to us by people who did come and who talked about personal experiences that they had with the theft of their property through these predatory practices.
And so much so is there deed theft going on that the bill is actually called the deed theft bill. And a lot of it was being done. The people were unscrupulous, but the unscrupulous people were protected by the lack of structure that our earlier guest James Peebles referred to. That there was no oversight.
No oversight and not strong enough protection for people who, once they are in trouble with their property, they are not really often able to take the time to really, and the under the old law, they could rescind transactions, but they could do it. They only had 5 days. We increased that to 14 days. So you have a longer period of time to investigate and to see what is in the best interest and whether or not I have actually made an appropriate relationship with someone who was trying to help.
They only had 5 days. 14
they
days.
Only had 5 days to rescind a transaction. Now at least we have 2 weeks.
Yeah. Even that might not be enough, but at least now you have 2 weeks. We're talking with Senator Velmanette Montgomery. She is the senator from the 25th Senatorial District in New York City. It is a senatorial district that encompasses central Brooklyn. And Velmanette, I know we promised to just keep everybody for a short time, so we're going to let you go. Okay. But I very much appreciate you being here with us. Good to talk to you. We're looking forward to seeing you in person on September 10th at First Church.
Thank you. And thank you, Bob. I'm so glad you're exposing this issue, and that's how we were able to address it. It was had a lot to do with the media exposing it, raising it, and making it an issue that none of us ignore.
Yes. Well, that's part of, well, as you know, that's how I understand my function.
I know. Thank God for you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being with us this morning. We're looking forward to seeing you Tuesday. We won't be so rushed. We'll have a little bit more time to just kind of roll this out, because that was a good distinction to point out. The details of the bill, giving more time to challenge, go from 5 days to 2 weeks, let people respond to that. There are other details of the bill that need to be made clear. We'll have an opportunity to do that Tuesday night. Senator Velmanette Montgomery, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, now, looking forward to seeing you. I'm Bob Law. It's 11:30 on a Saturday morning in the city. We are going to start turning the pages in a moment, look at a couple of other ideas, but I want you to make a note. Remember now, the emergency town hall meeting, it is not just these outside predators. There's a concern that city agencies like HPD, like the Housing Authority, city agencies are accused of stealing property of black homeowners, putting them in a position following policy that they concocted themselves, and putting homeowners in a position, property owners in a position where they become particularly vulnerable. And following that policy, they are able to seize the property of homeowners or property owners who have been manipulated into that vulnerable corner. See if we can't explain that even more so. Tuesday, September 10th. I know some people showed up last Tuesday. I certainly hope y'all come back this time. September 10th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the historic First Church of God in Christ, an emergency town hall meeting dealing with these issues. You'll hear from Councilman Robert Carnegie, from Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, from State Senator Velmanette Montgomery. James Peebles will be there. There are other people who are going to be there to engage in this conversation. I need you to understand clearly what a naturally occurring retirement community is, and get more clarity on the deed theft bill. Find out the status of the moratorium on foreclosures that the borough president has called for. It makes you wonder, what's going on? You know what I mean?
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some love.
It's 11:33 on this Saturday morning in the city, mid-morning, 75 degrees. It's going to be a real pleasant day today. It is sunny, and the promise is that it will be sunny and pleasant for the next few days, particularly on Tuesday. You don't have any reason not to be at First Church on time, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We're going to stop. We're going to start at 6, y'all, and we're going to stop at 8. So you know how some people come as the meeting is going on, as the forum is taking place, and you look up, and it's like 7:30, and there's somebody walking through the door. You know, you want to start locking the place. You know, having the meeting start at 6, we're going to start closing the doors at 6:30. But Tuesday, September 10th, 6 to 8 p.m., we'll be explaining the city programs that residents and some elected officials call deed theft. And it is a deed theft that targets black property owners particularly. And most often it is senior citizens who are targeted. And it is good to get all of this information and make sure that everybody in the community is fully aware, because there are some fundamental changes that have to occur. But they're going to occur, as Senator Montgomery pointed out, they're going to occur as a result of momentum in the street, as a result of communities being organized and beginning to make some demands. Some of the things that we talked about last week, don't wait for somebody to come and do it. Don't wait for candidates for office to come and start to raise the issues and deal with the issues that we ought to be dealing with. We can do it ourselves. We can raise it ourselves. We can create and even control the narrative. If people are running for office in New York City, we should decide that this is one of the issues that they're going to have to deal with, as opposed to letting them come in and tell us what their issues are, the things that they call the bread and butter issues. We ought to have a hand in putting the butter on the bread. You know, we ought to have a hand in identifying what those issues are, and let this be the narrative. Let this be what everybody talks about. Part of our concern is this deed theft. Part of our concern is this emerging New York City, this new New York. And on the surface, the new emerging city looks like a hip idea. People are having a good time. You know, people are in the sidewalk cafes. I know when I had a restaurant on Vanderbilt Avenue, it was illegal. You couldn't have an outdoor cafe. You know, the city codes and the building codes and the health department, you couldn't have an outdoor cafe. Once the population changed and the people who now own the restaurants were predominantly white, then along with their presence, building codes change, health department requirements change. So now you can have sidewalk cafes. There's a there are bicycle lanes, as people are encouraged to ride bicycles in the street. You know, I know somebody who says that the bicycle riders are particularly arrogant, and they are very much the problem with the accidents that are happening in the street with bicycle riders. I know a brother, he's listening now, I think. He said, anyway, we won't talk about that part of it. But there's a city that is emerging, and it looks like a really nice place, outdoor cafes and, you know, people are really in the street holding hands and smiling and getting along. And at the very same time, you look at communities like Fort Greene, while there are outdoor cafes up and down DeKalb Avenue and Fulton Street and Lafayette, and, you know, everything looks, there's some little trendy shops and things are happening. But the schools, the public schools right on Adelphi Street, those public schools in that same community, they are still segregated and inferior. The quality of police protection and the presence of the police is still very, very biased, with quality, courtesy, protection being made available to white citizens only, in a very real sense. Police protection and police professionalism seems to be set aside for whites only. All of this is going on. The schools don't work. The hospitals are inferior. The housing projects are falling apart. It looks like the New York City Housing Authority is in fact the largest slumlord in the city. If you walk through the housing projects and you look at the things that have been removed, the tenants didn't do that. I mean, trees and benches and lawns and grass, and the tenants did not remove that. The incinerator doesn't work. The elevators don't work. People are throwing garbage out of the window into the big garbage container that is sitting out there and next to the building. And the tenants didn't do that. They didn't put those garbage containers there, and the tenants didn't refuse to repair or even break the elevators. Elevators break down all the time. When I was growing up in the Kingsborough Housing Project, it was an ideal place to live. It was landscaped, lawns were manicured. It was an ideal place. It was like the condos are now, and the elevators broke down then. And it wasn't the tenants, it's the elevators. And so the elevators break down, they don't repair. People who live up on the eight, but now when I was in the projects, it was only six stories. People were growing, we could walk up to the top floor. Now the projects are like, how tall are the projects? 14 stories, 17 stories, even higher. And at the same time, there's a city emerging that looks very happy, and artists' lofts and condos and studios, but there's something else going on. You know what I mean? We're going to talk about that a little bit. It's 11:39, mid-Saturday morning. The phone number here is 212-209-2877. I'll let you know when we open the phones in a minute. But let's talk about what I feel is Donald Trump's real appeal. and what the 2020 challenge is really about, what that challenge really is. Trump's appeal, I maintain, is white privilege, period. That's all it is. There are people talking about the bread and butter issues. The bread and butter issues. I don't think that the Trump folk are really concerned about what we call bread and butter issues. They are concerned singularly about white privilege. And Trump is the only candidate that is making it clear that he despises all other people. And that the only people that are of any value are some white people. And seeing the Trump folk, who the white folk following Trump, think that it is safe to trust him and to support him because they think that because they are white, he will never turn on them. That's what people who support tyrants have always thought, until the tyrant turns on them. But they think, for instance, they say that, I've heard a number of people say that, you know, they like certain kind of things about Trump. And most often you would hear them say that he is outspoken, you know, that he has a certain kind of courage. He'll speak out. But the kind of things that they talk about, they very rarely say what it is that demonstrates his courage. I think that what they are talking about is that he is willing to openly despise other people. And that there are people who are glad to have somebody who will demonize Mexican mothers and children, who will demonize African nations, who will demonize black people. They like that. I think that, and they appreciate that, because they feel like, well, that's what those people really are. See, when you look at the kind of things that people talk about Trump, and as though you're supposed to be offended. See, when Trump looks at children being separated from their parents at the border, when they talk about Pence, who traveled on taxpayer dollars, and then they show you photos of Mexican children who are sleeping on the floor in these detention centers, and that's supposed to touch your heart. Look how terrible that is. See, what you have to understand is the Trump people don't care. They think that those Mexican children deserve that. They think that the Mexican children, black children, any children except their own, they think that they deserve the treatment that they are getting. After all, these are people who come to this country, just walk right in, benefit from all that this country has to offer for free. These are some poor people who got the audacity to get sick and go to the hospital. And when they go to the hospital, they walk right in and they get free medical care. I don't believe that's true, but there are people I've heard about four or five people say that they know somebody who works in a hospital who say that poor people walk right in and go right upstairs and get free medical care. I know people who have actually gone to the hospital. And the very first thing they ask is, what insurance do you have? And without insurance, you don't get any care. And you can go to the county hospital. And you go to the county hospital, and I don't know, the county hospital might take you without insurance. But if you go to the county hospital, like Kings County here in Brooklyn, there was a documentary once that was entitled about Kings County and the hospital next door, Downstate Medical Center. And the documentary was called Your Money or Your Life. And it said, if you don't have the money and insurance to pay Downstate Medical Center, you take your life in your own hands if you go into Kings County. The quality of service is dramatically different. And we've seen a number of studies to prove that. But they don't care. They think that the people who suffer are suffering what they deserve. And so Trump's appeal, I maintain, is white privilege. That's what he offers. There's not a concern about bread and butter issues. What about he said that he was going to build a wall, that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. Well, now you see that he's taken money from a number of other places that would ordinarily help poor people and to pay for the wall. Mexico is not paying for the wall. The American tax dollar is going to pay for the wall. The Trump folk don't care. They're not disappointed in him that he doesn't deliver. They're not disappointed in him that he lies all the time. They don't really care. because the one thing that he does not lie about is white privilege. He doesn't lie. He's consistent that only some white people are of any real value and are the real Americans. Talented, intelligent, competent white people, they call those Trump folk call the talented, intelligent, competent white people the elites. So they demonize intelligence and talent and competency, and they call them the elites. His folk don't care. I don't know that they really care about what are being called bread and butter issues. And so what do you do? I don't know if you can really run against white privilege by ignoring that that is what you are really running against. So people like the fact that Biden is more moderate than, say, Bernie Sanders. But it seems to me that it doesn't make any difference which one of them is the most moderate if neither one of them understands that they are running against white supremacy, period. It doesn't make any difference what their position on the issues are. It doesn't make any difference how moderate they are. The Trump folk don't care about moderate or not. They want to know your position on white privilege. They want to know your position on white supremacy and what you will do to protect white people who think that they are not competent enough to be competitive in here into the 21st century. You know, so what do you think? And don't wait for these politicians to do it for you. You know, and I've said before, you have to host the unity rallies. You have to hold the town hall meetings. You have to set the narrative. You have to begin to gather people together. And don't ask what they will do for you. You need to do some thinking yourself about what the issues are and tell them what you would have them do. That is how you negotiate with people. I'm at 212-209-2877 if you'd like to join the conversation for a minute. 212-209-2877. I think that the issue is who will define the future. See, the Trump folk want to be the ones to define the future. They want to be the ones to say what America will be like. And they want to create an America that is committed to white privilege, to white supremacy. And that's why they support him. And Trump benefits from the lack of energy and movement on the ground among those who say they oppose him. You know, and people are waiting for and fussing now. They're on TV fussing that the Democrats won't call for impeachment. Well, if you think that he ought to be out of office through impeachment, why don't you start a movement in the street for him to resign the way people have done in every other country where they were displeased with the leader? They went into the street and they didn't ask their other elected officials to impeach him. They went into the street and they asked him to resign. If you think so much so, you feel so strongly that he should not be there, why don't you start a movement calling on him to resign? See, I think we're spending too much time waiting for the politicians or somebody else to do what you are convinced is the right thing to do. Why don't you do it? All right? All right. I promise to let you get on the phone, right? We're running out of time. And so let me just tell you this, though. Next Saturday, we're going to be live from Weeksville in Brooklyn. Weeksville is on the corner of Bergen Street and Buffalo Avenue. Make a little note of that. We'll be broadcasting live from Weeksville. It's going to be a real good show, talking about the black contributions to the creation of Brooklyn, to the building and creating of Brooklyn. You ought to be there with me at Weeksville at 11 a.m. next Saturday, right on the corner. Really wonderful, wonderful building right across the street from the Kingsborough Housing Projects. That's how big projects used to be. You come and see what a project was supposed to be. We'll be there. But anyway, come out. But you can join me right now at 212-209-2877. Hello, you're on the air. Come on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good.
Hi, this is Patty in New Jersey. I really appreciate what you do, so I want to thank you. You know, I'm married to a beautiful Peruvian queen. We have a wonderful mixed daughter. And, you know, I have friends in all spectrums of the political sphere. And I think that probably, I do think that the white privilege thing is for real, and there's this whole idea of like, oh, diversity is white genocide, that whole hoopla. But I think that that's a smaller group than the larger group, which has been so negatively impacted by things like NAFTA and these free trade deals, which the corporate Democrats who are speaking the "we feel your pain" language come through, and then they basically legislate so that all of these jobs go away from America, and you have entire communities that are left devastated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I think that is true. I appreciate that. We have to hurry, though, but I appreciate your call. All right. What else? What else is on your mind? 212-209-2877. I'm Bob Law. This is From the Street with Bob Law. We're at 99.5 WBAI in the city. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning, Bob. The future of the United States could look bright if people of color, I'm talking about, you know, other than the African-American population and progressive white people understand that white supremacy has got to die. You know, Donald Trump is holding up white supremacy's last stand. And see, but if they fail to make the choice, because a lot of other people of color feel that, oh, if you align yourself with black people, that's the wrong way to go. It's black people who have always led the movement of heart and soul, mm-hmm. and to bring America to be what it's supposed to be.
We've always been the drum majors for justice.
Exactly. So, but if people of color have to make the choice, you know, you want to follow behind white supremacists, then you know the United States is always going to be is only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you understand that black people's call for justice is the only hope for the United States.
Mm, good point. All right, my brother, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New York, Long Island.
Okay.
Can I say this?
Okay, come on.
Can I say this?
Come on.
Okay. Like Marcus Garvey said, look for me in the whirlwind of the storm.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, they're giving these storms the wrong names.
Exactly.
If they name it Marcus, might cause people to think. If they name it Sojourner, it might cause people to think. But Marcus Garvey certainly did say it. And that storm, those storms, all of them, travel the same route as the African slave trade. You know, it might be time to reconsider what Minister Farrakhan has been talking about the God's hand moving in this whole equation here. Maybe it's not just a discussion about the weather. You know, it might. You can join the conversation. That is another conversation. We'll have it, too. You can join us. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Law. This is Margaret calling you from Brooklyn, and I wanted to speak to the poor conditions in public housing as it pertains to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That the continual poor living conditions is a lower quality standard that enables the supremacy, be it white or green. We have to take a good, careful, calculating look at that and begin to behave differently as individuals.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you.
We're about to run out of time. We can get another caller. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, hello. As they used to say, hello, hello, back with the show. This is your engineer. All right, let's go quickly now. I see the calls are there. What's happening? Are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, come on.
Yes, my name is Ramateen Muhammad. I got to do this quickly. I'm glad you mentioned about the most humble Miss Lewis Farrakhan, because that's true. We have to understand, Mr. Law, as you well know, politics is politics. But the only way we're going to get through this, we have to separate from the Caucasian mentality, not just the white skin, but whoever thinks on a Caucasian level, which is like a beast from the cave, we have to separate from. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, now, thank you for your call. Let me remind you again now. We are going to be live from the street from the Weeksville Heritage Center next Saturday. I want you to come out and join us. And this time when you come out for the live broadcast, this time we're going to feed you. You know, we didn't feed you in the past. We might feed from now on, too. But this time we're going to feed you. There's going to be some refreshments there. We're going to have a little bit of a reception after the broadcast. And maybe prior to the broadcast, we're going on the air, as you know, at 11 a.m. We're going to be at Weeksville. I don't know the street address for Weeksville, but you can't miss it. It's a wonderful building. It takes up the whole corner. It is it takes up half the block. It is on Bergen Street and Buffalo Avenue. So if you're from Brooklyn, you know how to get to Bergen Street and Buffalo Avenue. We're looking for you to come out and be with us next Saturday live from Weeksville. And then there's audience participation. And in order to get you to participate this time, we're actually going to feed you. Won't be a heavy breakfast now, but it will be some. But we are going to feed you. So come on out and be with us now. And don't forget Tuesday. Now, I'm not going to feed you all on Tuesday now. But on Tuesday, September 10th at 6 p.m., the emergency town hall meeting that we've been talking about. City agencies accused of stealing property of black homeowners. Some steps have been taken to correct that. There are some elected officials that have taken some steps, and residents and some elected officials have charged the city's Housing and Preservation Department, HPD, as being the major agency improperly seizing the property of black New Yorkers. And some of these elected officials will be there to address these community concerns and explain the steps that each of them have recently taken to protect black property owners against what is being called deed theft. So I'm looking forward. Want you to be there. In the meantime, remember, stay close to your radio.
Your barriers, the taller I become, the further you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, something inside so strong.
Hi, this is Leonard Lopate, host of Leonard Lopate at Large, weekdays at 1 p.m. I want to encourage my listeners to become Lopate at Large WBAI buddies. You can become a buddy, a sustaining BAI member, for as little as $10 a month. Please go to give to WBAI.org, or call 516-620-3602. And thank you.
This is the mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing. Stay tuned for Cat Radio Cafe Sunday night at 11 on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. On Sunday, September 8th, virtuoso fiddle player Ben Paley, son of the late virtuoso banjo player Tom Paley, on Ben's Music and American Tour, and art historian Mark Rogers on his one-man performance of Da Vinci and Michelangelo, The Titans Experience.
And in the next hour of Cat Radio Cafe,
the WBAI Quartet of Poets reads from their work.
Sunday night at 11 on WBAI Cat Radio Cafe.
And remember our slogan.
Do cats write poetry?
Every time they walk across the keyboard, XXXLLMMMM, comma, comma, comma.
WBAI's Local Station Board is the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible for local management and operations.
The next meeting of the Local Station Board will be Wednesday, September 11th. at 7 p.m. at the YWCA, 30 3rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, between Atlantic Avenue and State Street.
Meetings of the local station board are open to the public, and, as always, there will be an opportunity for public comment.
The meeting is wheelchair accessible.
Again, that's Wednesday, September 11th at 7 p.m. at the YWCA, 30 3rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. Listeners and the public
are invited and welcome.
Do you have to contribute to WBAI to come to the meeting?
No.
But why not?
Why not?